United States military forces in Guinea have not removed me from power militarily, the next best thing to do was to say he must step down and he must leave the country.
So we cannot in any way, shape, or form say, well, you know, they have Saddam Hussein and now they have the U.S. occupiers and that's better. No. They're both wrong, and actually this situation right now, I believe very much, is more destructive than it was previously.
Naming other countries where they believed it was possible that Saddam was seeking uranium. So it's an apple in Cincinnati and an orange in the State of the Union. The two do not compare that directly.
Because it is absolutely bogus for us to have gone to war the way we did. As I used to say when I was doing my interviews before the war, the issue of weapons of mass destruction is primordial. It is important.
This is Pacifica's Peace Watch for Monday, July 14th, 2003. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Iraq's new governing council voted today to send a delegation to the UN Security Council and assert its right to represent Baghdad on the world stage. An explosion wrecked a car near the council's meeting site, and yet another U.S. soldier was killed in an ambush. As the U.S.-backed 25-member council met Monday, governments in Europe and Asia, even those critical of the U.S.-led war to oust Saddam Hussein, welcomed the body as a first step in returning political power to the Iraqis. While public support for President Bush has dropped sharply amid growing concerns about U.S. military casualties and doubts whether the war with Iraq was worth fighting, according to a new Washington Post ABC News poll, Bush's overall job approval rating dropped to 59%, down 9 points in the past 18 days. That decline exactly mirrored the slide in the public support for Bush's handling of the situation in Iraq, which now stands at 58%. And for the first time, slightly more than half the country, 52%, believes there has been an unacceptable level of U.S. casualties in Iraq, up 8 points in less than 3 weeks. Liberia's government today accused rebels of launching battles despite a ceasefire and urged the speedy arrival of international peacekeepers to quell fighting in the West African country. A high-ranking official from the main rebel group currently in neighboring Ghana for peace talks said he was not aware of any serious fighting. There are always small skirmishes, but as far as an all-out war, I don't know about that, said Kabina Jane, a leader of Liberians United for Reconciliation and Democracy, or LURD. The government previously had reported that fighting over the weekend claimed at least 15 lives. Meanwhile, the Bush administration is considering whether to send U.S. troops into the embattled nation to help restore peace. In an exclusive interview today with Liberian President Charles Taylor, WPFW programmer Ambrose Lane Sr. spoke with the president about the civil war in his country and whether he welcomes the presence of U.S. troops. We caution you that the quality of the telephone line from Liberia was quite poor.
We have a former civil war of a radical Islamic group that is outside of the capital of Monrovia. We have thousands of combatants fighting on the side of the government, the armed forces of Liberia. We have also militia forces that have been recruited under our laws. And then the president is asked unceremoniously to hightail out of town, leaving chaos, leaving confusion. It just does not make sense. That is, the two forces fighting, got to be someone to come in and referee the whole process to make sure that we bring some sense to it. There's got to be orderliness here in this process, and if we do not do that, we can expect chaos. Simple like that.
Do you welcome U.S. troops, or would you rather see the United Nations or ECOWAS troops come in to Liberia before you leave?
Very much so. It's very important, especially United States troops.
Mm-hmm.
Look, the United States is solid, you know, because of this problem, and this you have to fix it. They've given Guinea this money. They've given arms. The boys are in the bushes. These are their dogs. Let them call their dogs out. So it's important for them to be here. And I can assure the American people that no one, not one Liberian, is going to fire a shot at an American GI in the country.
Mm-hmm.
We love Americans. We hope that they have handled themselves better in dealing with my government. But there is no hostility. There's no animosity here. Yes, we are upset because we feel that we have not been given a chance. but they should come here. But there's also a second thing that's important to mention in this interview. We see America coming in here on a long-term basis. America, Liberians feel owe it to us to pay some attention to Liberia that they have not paid in 165 years of our association plus with the United States. In fact, as president, I'm looking forward to maybe a Marshall-type plan for Liberia. President Bush has advanced the challenge. I think the troops should come, not 500, not 1,000. I think they need several thousand troops here, and even professional troops. As your famous United States Army Corps of Engineers, we need to see bridges built here. We need to see roads constructed here. We need to look at a total construct, economic, social, political, in the country. And so I don't want us to look at America's involvement here as just President Bush coming to Africa and you have these quick lines, I want to do this, I want to do that. There's a challenge out here for President Bush. And I'm sure he's a good man. He means well. He has to and should accept this challenge. Send in the American troops, not just the bugger wheat. Send in the goodies for Liberia. We love you. We want you to help. So troops are very important. But troops are going to spell one important thing. Final United States commitment to doing something good in Liberia.
You know, I just got word a week or so ago that your opposition killed about 350 market women. Is that true?
Well, more than that. More than that. You know, we've had all kinds of atrocities in Liberia. All kinds of atrocities in Liberia. If I understand you properly, in fact, there's a film that was shot by a Western journalist that showed some things that, in fact, could not even be shown on television. It would make that some people be sick at the stomach, eating human hearts, cutting human beings open and eating flesh. There's been a lot of problems, and one does not understand why Washington has not condemned that and put their foot down.
Mm-hmm.
Rather, what they've done, they've come to the elected president and said, guess what? We want you to step down and leave the country. As if the bad guy is the elected president of the country. I'm not being accused in Liberia of having tortured too much here, or executing people, or squandering public funds. It's just not understood. One cannot understand what is going on. Yes, that is true, what you just explained.
Now, they have made a great deal of your indictment for war crimes. And I'd like you to respond to the charges and answer this. We understand from the press here in this country that Nigeria is going to make arrangements for you to come there. Can you share with our listeners what kind of arrangements you've made with Nigeria, if it's true, and your response to the indictment?
Well, let me just respond quickly and give you a genesis. If you look at my government, I came to power, like I said, 80% of the vote. Immediately following my elections, the subterfuge commenced. The arms embargo on Liberia remained. The United States government formulated this covert rebel war. There were sanctions placed on this government. There were embargoes placed on this government. There were travel bans placed on this government. So on the first hand, everything was done to have a fuel situation because the wrong man won in Liberia. Having said that, let's look at the indictment. The indictment grows out of United Nations Security Council actions that were backed by the United States and Britain against this government and against me personally. And as we all know, decisions of the Security Council are not based on evidence, factual evidence of law. It's based on conjecture and they are political decisions. So actions were taken there, and I just see this whole indictment, which is politically motivated in Sierra Leone, as another way of destroying my government and trying to bring me to disgrace. The court in Sierra Leone is, in fact, a Sierra Leonean court, drawn under Sierra Leonean laws and enacted by the Sierra Leonean Parliament. The United Nations is involved in that process from a technical level and also from a financial level, in support of the process of reconciliation in Sierra Leone. So for that court to, quote-unquote, indict me meant that it had to get the blessing from Washington as further subterfuge to disgrace and bring Charles Taylor down. And so come in now, because the people of Liberia did not take to the street, because the boys at the center, the bushes, are armed and trained by United States military forces in Guinea, have not removed me from power militarily, the next best thing to do was to say he must step down and he must leave the country. The president of Martinville has extended to me an invitation to go to Nigeria. All African leaders are baffled by this call that I should leave the country. So, in the interest of making sure that my people continue to survive, because how else can a leader protect his people when there's a UN arms embargo against the president, when there are sanctions and embargoes on principal export commodities, when the president and officials of his government are barred from traveling? How does the government defend its people? How does the leader continue to fight? So, I may just say involuntarily, I've had to forsake my people that they would leave. And so, as I accepted the invitation, I will go there, and Nigeria have said that they are not going to turn me over to any war crimes tribunal because it is politically motivated, just as there are such courts in Europe. As you may very well know, President George Bush and other senior officials of the United States government are indicted for war crimes in some old Cameroon court in Belgium. We are not going there. I said no one can expect that the president of Liberia should submit to a politically motivated Cameroon court in Sierra Leone that is purely an internal court in Sierra Leone. But I'm saying to you, it's just part of the continuous subterfuge to cause this chaos in Liberia.
Liberian President Charles Taylor in an exclusive interview with Pacifica's WPFW programmer Ambrose Lane Sr. More of the interview with Taylor and a thorough discussion on the civil war in Liberia can be heard this Wednesday on a Peace Watch special dealing with the war in Liberia. Special thanks to WPFW's Ron Pinchback for assistance with that segment. The Bush administration tried to bring the African Uranium Road to an end yesterday, insisting that the American people have moved on. But it was clear that the scandal over the president's case for war in Iraq was still gathering momentum. In his last press conference as White House spokesman today, Ari Fleischer was bombarded with questions about what the president knew and when he knew it. The question remains as to why Iraq's alleged attempt to purchase uranium from Niger was used in the State of the Union address when the administration was advised almost a year before that there was no evidence to support that assertion. This, according to Ambassador Joseph Wilson, who was commissioned by Cheney to investigate the allegation. Today's White House press briefing began with a question from veteran reporter and columnist Helen Thomas.
Does the president stand by all the statements he made in the run-up to the invasion of Iraq?
I think you've heard what the president has said about the State of the Union remarks about whether Iraq did or did not seek uranium from Africa. Other than that, of course the president does. Even on that, that is a judgment that the president has made in hindsight, knowing now what we did not know at the time of the State of the Union, and the president, in retrospect, would not have included that remark in the State of the Union speech, as you know.
He still thinks that Saddam Hussein wanted to become a nuclear power and was trying to get uranium, and you will find the weapons of mass destruction.
Nothing has changed the president's thinking on that. Absolutely.
Dr. Rice said yesterday that the British still believe the intelligence that Iraq was trying to buy uranium from Africa. Does the United States think that that intelligence is correct?
Well, that is what the British have said. The British stand by their reporting. They have sources on their reporting that we do not have on our reporting, which is not unusual in the intelligence community. The British stand by it, and British intelligence services are very respected.
Right, but do we independently think that the British intelligence is right or wrong, or do we just not know?
I think this remains an issue about did Iraq seek uranium in Africa, an issue that very well may be true. We don't know if it's true, but nobody can say it is wrong.
I don't quite understand why White House officials are clinging to the idea that it may not be wrong, we just can't prove that it's right. I mean, what's the burden of proof here? Does this information not have the kind of presumption of being not true until proven correct?
No, I think that when you look at Iraq's history, Iraq, of course, did pursue weapons of mass destruction, biological weapons. They had biological weapons prior to the war. Chemical weapons, same thing. They had chemical weapons prior to the war. The third piece of the weapons of mass destruction story is nuclear. And there can be no doubt in anybody's mind that Iraq pursued nuclear weaponry prior to the war.
Ari, can I just come back to this idea of you saying it wasn't a central reason for the war, which may be true, but it was certainly used to buttress the case and build a case that it was urgent that Saddam Hussein be dealt with as quickly as possible. Take it in the whole. When you look at the lack of discovery of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, the fact that the intelligence surrounding its alleged purchase of uranium in Africa was erroneous, does that not speak to the idea that there wasn't a sense of urgency to go after Iraq and you could have waited, you could have built a bigger coalition to go in?
No, I think that given again the fact that the United Nations and the international community concluded that Saddam Hussein had unaccounted for botulin, VX, sarin, nerve agent, chemical and biological weapons, that Iraq was pursuing nuclear weapons, the reconstitution if they could. I think if you look at all those factors in the post-9/11 world, the only conclusion the president can reach is that this country needs to be protected from the threats that Saddam Hussein presents to our country. And that's exactly what the president said in his repeated public statements.
But taken in the whole, is it not true that there wasn't the sense of urgency to deal with Saddam Hussein that this White House presented?
Again, they were seeking to reconstitute their nuclear program, whether they got the uranium from Africa or from somewhere else.
You refer to it only as a minor element, but it was important enough to delete in the October speech a reference to this.
A reference to what?
A reference to Iraq's alleged attempt to get the uranium from Niger. In that case, the CIA director asked Mr. Hadley to delete it, and it was deleted. Should that not have raised all kinds of red flags come January when a similar reference pops up in the speech? Should not Mr. Hadley or someone from the White House have made sure to check this out?
Well, it was a different reference in the State of the Union speech.
It was similar.
But it was different. It's similar in the fact that it's Iraq and Iraq pursuing weapons. That's similar, of course. What is dramatically and markedly different and makes the Cincinnati speech different from the State of the Union speech is the Cincinnati speech had a sentence in it about Iraq pursuing a specific quantity of weapons from one country, Niger. The State of the Union address had different language, and it was that Iraq is pursuing uranium, seeking uranium from Africa. That's because there was additional reporting from the CIA, separate and apart from Niger, naming other countries where they believed it was possible that Saddam was seeking uranium. So it's an apple in Cincinnati and an orange in the State of the Union. The two do not compare that directly.
If I understand your reconstruction of events right, you have a CIA that is nervous about a specific reference in the Cincinnati speech, puts that specific back into the NIE 3 weeks later. You go ahead to the State of the Union and you get a general comment drawn from the NIE.
Based on additional information from the NIE.
All that information is in the NIE.
That's
and
right.
Then a week later you have Secretary Powell show up at the United Nations with no reference to it at all because all of that information, as described by the president, is suspect. Are you telling us that the CIA changed their assessment during that time three times?
No, I'm saying to you that the CIA, if they had said take out the reference to seeking uranium from Africa, it would have been taken out. Not because it necessarily was inaccurate, because it wasn't conclusive enough to rise to the presidential level.
So something that's in the NIE is not conclusive enough for a State of the Union speech? The NIE is a classified document going to all of Congress.
That's why the line was set, because it was in the NIE. That's exactly why.
And therefore, No,
I think that's a question that the CIA evaluates over time. And the NIE said it conclusively, and that is why it rose to the level where it could be considered as part of the State of the Union, because it originated with the CIA's interagency process of the National Intelligence Estimate.
To follow up on Barry's question, the apple was a reference in a draft of the October speech to a specific quantity of uranium from Niger. To take another apple, the draft of the State of the Union speech, according to Dr. Rice's briefing on the plane on Friday, included references to quantity and place, and we were told that that was Niger, that were taken out. So despite that red flag, this idea came back in draft of the State of the Union. You just said that it was because it was contained in the NIE. The NIE had a footnote saying this information was highly dubious. Who on the president's staff would let him say something that the State Department had said was highly dangerous?
Well, keep in mind, again, the process of a national intelligence estimate. There are six agencies in the United States government, all involved in the intelligence community, that put together the national intelligence estimate. It can be often a footnoted document where one of the six agencies will say, we have questions about it, this information may or may not be accurate. Unanimity is not always the standard for an IE. It is an interagency process that lends itself to consensus. In this case, consensus from five of the six agencies involved. We've been very upfront. State Department looked at it, and they came to a different conclusion. All the rest of the entities that looked at it came to a different conclusion from state, which I think also is reflective of why Secretary Powell, who works the closest with the State Department employees, did not include it.
White House spokesman Ari Fleischer. As pressure mounts against the Bush administration, the activist website MoveOn.org, as well as Win Without War, America's largest mainstream coalition opposed to the Bush First Strike Doctrine, have launched a print and television ad campaign across the country calling for a congressional investigation into whether the president intentionally misled Congress and the American public with false claims about Iraq's possession of weapons of mass destruction.
George Bush told us Iraq was a nuclear threat. He said they were trying to purchase uranium. That they were rebuilding their nuclear facilities. So we went to war. Now there's evidence we were misled, and almost every day, Americans are dying in Iraq. We need the truth, not a cover-up. Log on to misleader.org today.
Peace Watch spoke earlier today with Zach Exley, a member of MoveOn.org, about his group's ad campaign.
Well, it's a pretty simple concept, but I think it's very hard-hitting. There are some images of Bush. That's the visual. But then we've also got his specific quotes that of the things that he told us about the weapons in Iraq, which have now turned out not to be true.
For example?
Iraq is expanding and improving facilities that were used for the production of biological weapons, September 12, 2002. The Iraqi regime has stockpiled biological and chemical weapons. It is rebuilding the facilities used to make these weapons, October 2, 2002. Our intelligence officials estimate that Saddam Hussein has the materials to produce as much as 500 tons of sarin, mustard, and VX nerve agent, January 28, 2003. We have sources that tell us that Saddam Hussein recently authorized Iraqi field commanders to use chemical weapons, February 8, 2003. Intelligence gathered by this and other governments leaves no doubt that the Iraqi regime continues to possess and conceal some of the most lethal weapons ever devised. March 17th, 2003.
And so this will put right before the American people some of those statements that we were hearing throughout the lead-up to the war, the invasion of Iraq. What will people find when they visit your website, and what specific action are you asking them to take?
Well, we're asking people to sign a petition, an online petition that asks for the truth and that urges our Congress to set up a special investigation of this whole affair. And also, I should note the way this ad was paid for. This ad was made possible by contributions, mostly small contributions, average about $35, from thousands of individuals. And that's what's really interesting here, is that we're able, using the web and using our membership base, we're able to really mobilize actions like this to take back a little bit of the mainstream media.
The administration has attempted to downplay Bush's inaccurate statements about Niger selling enriched uranium to Iraq, saying that this was just, 16 words out of an entire State of the Union address, and that the case for war revolved around much more than this single point. Why do you think this is so significant? And was it more than just the single statement that led your group to call Bush the misleader?
Well, absolutely, it was more than that single statement. But I do think that that single statement was very important. That single statement changed a lot of my friends' minds about whether we should go to war or not. And I just don't think that very, very few people in this country would have believed, or can still believe, that our president would say such a blatant lie in such an important speech. And now, of course, he's there. Everybody's scrambling to protect him and saying that he didn't know that this was something, that this was a forgery, and that the CIA and that his own staffers knew it was a forgery, that the documents that statement were based on. But I do think that this is, even though that was an incredibly important statement that he uttered at an incredibly important speech, but it is so much more than just that one comment. I mean, I remember watching Vice President Cheney on the radio about a week before the war started, watching him on TV, and he was saying that Saddam Hussein was months, if not weeks, away from building a bomb, from building a nuclear bomb. And that now, looking back, that was just completely ridiculous. And that's our vice president talking there, just making stuff up on TV to drag us into that war.
And so you're using the L word. You called Bush a liar. In the ad, however, he's called a misleader. Do you think the ad is actually strong enough? Do you think it's time that people started associating this, what the administration is downplaying, as misspeak, or that he had no knowledge that this information was inaccurate, time to start saying that he actually lied to the American people?
Well, yeah, I do think so. I think that, you know, we designed this ad with a certain purpose in mind. We wanted to get it on TV. We wanted the major networks to show this ad to their audiences on their TV news programs. And it has, by the way, been shown on a lot of the primetime news programs, and it's still being shown this week.
Have any declined?
A couple did decline at first, and then CNN and NBC, I believe, right at the last minute, backed out. But I think that now that others have run it, they are running it now. So it was just a case of, you know, who's going to go first. And the interesting thing is, I think that a lot of us progressives, it's easy for us to just throw our hands up and say that everything's being blocked by the mainstream media. And of course, the mainstream media does block a lot. They just do flat out block a lot of important information that needs to get out there. But there are so many opportunities where even when they put up a little bit of resistance at first, there's a way to get it through. And once one of them puts an ad like this, which is a little sensationalistic in their view, once one of them runs it, then everybody else can run it. Then that barrier is broken. And so a lot of times it's worth not just giving up, but really pushing and getting it on the air.
What kind of reaction have you gotten?
We've gotten a great reaction from our members. People are really happy that this is going on the air, and people have been contributing to put it on the air. And also, if anybody wants to contribute to help us do new kinds of do new ads in the future like this, 100% of people's contributions for this ad went to put this ad on the air.
There's also a print version of your ad that's appeared in the New York Times as well as in the Washington Metro and San Francisco BART subway systems.
That's right. It's got the same quotes, and it's got a picture of Bush in his State of the Union speech from that moment right when he was giving us that lie. And it's got misleader right over his forehead.
What are you ultimately hoping will come out of all these efforts?
Well, this effort plus the efforts of a whole lot of other groups, and now, thank God, even the Democratic Party, I think that what we're all doing together is breaking this. We're doing what we should do. We're doing what citizens should do in a situation like this where they're being lied to by their leaders. We're just pointing out the lies, and we're telling the truth, and we're trying to spread the word. And it, unfortunately, for some reason, on the progressive side of things and when it comes to the Democratic Party leadership, this is not done all that often on our side. For some reason, the Republicans and the Bush administration just get away with a whole lot. And I think it's nobody really calls them on it. And I do think that it is some combination of the Democratic Party leadership being afraid to take a bold stance and actually call Bush a liar or to point out the distortions of the truth. But, you know, also, though, I think that we progressives have to take some of the blame, too. we're just too quick to sort of give up and assume that there's no way that we can make our voice heard.
Zach Exley is a member of the activist organization MoveOn.org. You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. We'll be back in a moment.